Welcome to the last episode of the Not White Collective's video podcast series In Dialogue, Candid Conversations with Not White Artists and Arts Administrators from Pittsburgh and Beyond. My name is Henya. Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge the history of the land and its people. We humbly acknowledge the indigenous people of this land, the Lenni, Lenape, Shawnee, and Haudenosaunee, the Six Nations, that is the Mohawk, Oneida, Onondaga, Seneca, Cayuga, and Tuscarora. We are gathered today on Jadioge, on Onondaga or Seneca word for Pittsburgh or between two rivers, the Wolegane and Monongahela. These are the Lenape words for the Allegheny and Monongahela rivers, which translate to the best flowing river off the hills and where the banks cave in and erode. While an acknowledgement of the land, its indigenous peoples are not enough, it is an important social justice and decolonial practice that promotes indigenous visibility and a reminder that we are voluntary or involuntary uninvited settlers and colonizers on indigenous land. Let this land acknowledgement be an opening for all of us to contemplate a way to join in the colonial and indigenous movements for sovereignty and self-determination. About the Not White Collective, we are artists, we are arts administrators, sometimes both. We work in a sector where we can't see ourselves reflected back to us. Throughout this series, Not White Collective members will be in dialogue with our regional, national, and international colleagues and peers to unearth and unpack how we do what we do to decolonize and humanize the arts sector. Tonight's guest is Urayoan Noel. Urayoan Noel is a Puerto Rican poet, critic, translator, and performer who teaches at New York University and at Stetson University's MFA of the Americas. He's the author of The Critical Study Invisible Movement, New Yorican Poetry from the 60s to Slam, University of Iowa Press 2014. Winner of the LASA Latino Studies Book Award and of 8 books of poetry, including Borinquen, named the Book of the Year by El Nuevo Día and Transverso, named the Book of the Year by the New York Public Library Book, and also longlisted for the Penn Open Book Award. Noel's translations include No Voodoo, Please, by Winston Gonzalez, by Ugly Duckling Press, 2018, and Adjacent Islands by Nicole Cecilia Delgado, UDB, Double Cross Press, / La Impresora, 2022. He has been a finalist for the National Translation Award, the Best Translated Book Award, the International Latino Book Awards, the National Poetry Series Past Prize for Poetry, and the Modern Language Association Book Prizes. And his other honors include a National Books Critics Circle Small Press Highlight Selection and fellowships from the Howard Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Schomburg Center, as well as Letras Boricuas Fellowship in Poetry from the Mellon and Flamboyant Foundations. Noel's work has been exhibited at the Museum of the City of New York and the Museo de Arte de Puerto Rico, and has been published in the New York Times, Poetry, and Google Arts and Culture. His international performances include Posse Festival Berlin, Barcelona Poesía, and the Toronto Biennial of Art. And he has been both fellow and faculty at Canto Mundo and the Macondo Writers Workshop, originally from Río Piedras, Puerto Rico. Urayoan Noel lives in the Bronx and is a translator for the Puerto Rican Literature Project, PLPR, and an editorial advisor for the Latino Poetry Initiative, Library of America. He serves on the board of the Clemente Soto Vélez Cultural and Educational Center. Now we welcome Urayoan Noel. Hola, Urayoan. ¿Qué tal? How are you?
Hola, Henya. Thank you so much, and to you and to the Not White Collective for the invitation. I must say it is the first time, la primera vez, that I get introduced with a hip-hop or trip-hop version of Eric Satie, and you know, the geek in me is loving it. Me encanta. So, gracias.
That's excellent. Wonderful. Well, let's get right to it. I'm going to ask you a few questions that we kind of like ask our guests and see how you... Anyway, how do you identify?
Complicated question. Let's see. So my dad My late father was a white Anglo man from California, and my mom is Puerto Rican, and I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. And so in that sense, I identify as mixed, mixed race, and also as, let's see, queer, right? I'm epileptic, so neurodivergent, right? And we can keep adding those differences. And I think especially that experience of, growing up between languages and between cultures really ties in a lot into the work that I do as a poet, as a performer, and as a translator.
That's beautiful. Yes. So you said that, your people are Puerto Rican and Anglo-Saxon, you said? Yes. Yeah. So how has the intersection of race and gender impacted your career and your ambitions?
Interesting. Well, obviously, as a cis male, right, even though I'm, I'm queer, well, there's obviously, a privilege associated to that, as well, obviously, as to skin and all that. And so I write also about that in some of my critical work, including more recent work on Latinx social media, which I hope will be a book sometime soon. I'm really interested in also these interstitial spaces of difference, right? And in thinking also of poetry and performance, right, as sites to interrogate some of those differences. So I think for me, it's also always a question of both and, not either or, right? And that applies to many, many ways in which I identify, and allowing myself to be both and, right, has really been also a way of, honoring my privileges, but also working through, right, struggles and being able to teach and organize, right, from a space of conciencia, right, about, where I come from and how it relates to the work that I do.
Well, you basically answer how's your unique lived experience enhance your work. So what topic is most important to you right now? I know you just said.
We just published, right, this beautiful translation of mine of the amazing poet from Puerto Rico, Nicole Cecilia Delgado, who runs La Impresora, an incredible eco-feminist publishing project, also kind of community activist vision with the poet Amanda Hernandez. So shout out to La Impresora, and this project is not just my translation of two artist books by Nicole Cecilia Delgado, and here's one, here's what the original looked like. But I think their work, La Impresora's work and Nicole's work has been a model, right? In the context of the past 5 years of life in Puerto Rico, right? For those of us who are not in Puerto Rico, right? In thinking about what does solidarity look like? What does community building look like? How to use the technologies that we have available, including, right, digital technologies in this case, and Zoom and so on, to organize and mobilize, but also find, joy alongside with resistance and community. So definitely, I've been thinking about translation, right, since I think part of translating a book like this, right, was my admiration for Nicole's work as a poet and organizer, but also a sense of how her work cultivates community and my connection, right, to her and to the community building projects that she undertakes. We actually met in New York, right? Even though we're both from Puerto Rico, as part, right, of a range of poetry communities in Loisaida and El Barrio and so on. So definitely it's been a process of undertaking this work of translation, right, in a very different way from some of the earlier translation projects I've done, where I don't have that kind of personal connection and also political identification with the poet that I'm translating. And, Boricua to Boricua, it's been beautiful and a real blessing.
That's wonderful. So how do you find that, understanding the situation in Puerto Rico right now, how, like, there's so many challenges with electricity and, like, infrastructure and all that stuff, has that, like, affected any of your work and your process?
Not mine, certainly.
Being
in New York certainly affected the collaboration, right? It definitely slowed things down. It made us have to be a lot more deliberate, but also a lot more strategic. But again, all those are aspects that are built into the kind of La Impresora project. And so again, you should invite Nicole to be a part of this, because I think she can talk to you about what it is, for example, to find paper if you're running, right? And an artist book publishing project in Puerto Rico, right? And it's you know, and of course, all kinds of products, right, are limited, right? But Nicole's work, her poetry itself, right, engages some of these questions of resistance to austerity, of kind of radical imagination, right, of the space of collective projects. She was definitely in conversation with the artist Beatriz Santiago Muñoz, right, in organizing some of these projects. So the sense that yes, there are these obstacles, but you know, we also have the creativity, right, and the arts, right, are a crucial site, right, not just for expression but for enacting, right, some of these coalitional possibilities and some of these new ways, you know, alternative ways of being together.
That's wonderful. So I'll move on to a different question. I wanted to address the situation in Puerto Rico, because as we both know, it's very real, you know, as you said, it creates obstacles for all of us. So especially when we're communicating from the island to here. Yeah. So what does inclusive leadership or gender equity look like to you?
I mean,
you're working with a woman and you're working with feminists and all that stuff.
The making of this project, right? So this was not just Nicole herself, but two other women, Rebecca from Ugly Duckling, herself a brilliant translator, and MC Highland, brilliant poet who runs Double Cross Press out of Brooklyn and now out of Pennsylvania. And so that was a real challenge for them, especially. I was like a little bit removed from it, because I wasn't actually making the book. I was translating and I was participating in it, right? But they really are three bookmakers, right? And three women, right, running these alternative publishing projects that try to imagine and make space, right? Not just for women poets. If you know La Impresora, they publish so many queer poets, trans poets, Black poets, right? So thinking of kind of spaces of difference, right? And I love that Nicole does the and Rebecca, right, and MC do these kinds of beautiful artifacts, but they're not just art world commodities, right? They're very much understood as ways of highlighting, right, you know, women's voices, but also creating, right, platforms for difference. And I think they're really deliberate in that. And so it was really an inspiration. I felt like obviously there's something of a, right, of a sacrifice in terms of translating somebody else's work, right, versus doing my own, right? It is a time commitment, but it was so easy to do this, right? And it was one reason I proposed this to the publisher, because I was so passionate about it, both because Nicole's work is so urgent, right, in the context of, you know, Puerto Rico over the five plus past years, but also because of what it models, right? So it was challenging to do this, but I had so much fun and I felt so sustained, right? And so, you know, so clear also, right, that these are, you know, projects of coalition building, and that decentralized, all of them, and that more and more, right, are solidarity and liberation, right, has to engage those possibilities.
Right. So can you talk a little bit more about like the actual like content of the book, as far as like how it relates to the situation in Puerto Rico for women? Or, you know, I know that you're speaking from a male perspective, but just from what you've gathered, just by learning, just to be in this process with them.
Of course. Well, I think these are this that I translated, right? It's one small book, but containing two artist books that document camping trips that Nicole took with friends, right, to the islands of Vieques and Mona. So two islands, right, off the main island of Puerto Rico within the Puerto Rican archipelago. And so these camping is for Nicole a kind of means of investigating nature, right, thinking about connections to land, right, to indigeneity, but also imagining, right, activist futures, and using book art, right, as a way to translate the untranslatable, in this case, right, the experience of land and specifically occupied land, right, since both Mona as a U.S. nature reserve and Vieques, right, as the site of a long-term, right, U.S. Navy base, right, whose ecological and other effects, you know, are still profoundly impacting the island, right, are pretty significant, right, not just those two smaller islands, but the way their histories are erased, right, within Puerto Rican literary canon that highlights very much San Juan, right? And so it's important also to say that Nicole is based in Isabela, right, on the, in the northwest of Puerto Rico, right, not in San Juan. And so that sense of moving away from this cosmopolitan sense, right, of kind of the geographies that have been highlighted in existing Puerto Rican literature and cultural production, right, is one of the things that Nicole's work does. So I can read, this is actually from Subtropical Dry. So this is a kind of camping trip to Vieques, right? And I think I want to read this also because it's finding beauty, right, within the everyday and finding beauty in connecting, right, what's in the natural world to one's sense of one's own body, which is a power that poetry, right, is very much suited to, right? And so I want to focus on that. So much of what we highlight when we talk about recent Puerto Rican cultural production, right, is the disaster, right, is the violence. And I want to read something that affirms, right, the kind of power of our bodies and the power of our imagination. So this is called Spirit Animal, and I'll read Nicole's, and it's called Spirit Animal in Spanish, right? So I'll read Nicole's Spanish and then my translation.
Please, thank you.
Sure. En este punto, el olor a bestia de mi cuerpo empieza a ser lo único importante. Dormir a la intemperie, arrojar al mar el baño y la peinilla, mientras conecto la piedra con la estrella, se balancean olor y cielo. At this point, my body's beastly smell starts to be all that matters. To sleep outdoors, to cast one's bath and comb into the sea, while I connect the stone to the star, they balance each other, smell and sky. Caballo salvaje, caballo realengo, caballo sin nombre, caballo muy joven, caballo dormido, caballo miedoso, caballo fantasma, caballo silvestre, caballo de nadie, caballo tan flaco, caballo de noche, caballo en la calle, caballo con hambre, caballo salvaje. Wild horse, stray horse, nameless horse, youngest horse, sleeping horse, scared horse, phantom horse, native horse, nobody's horse, skinniest horse, night horse, street horse, hungry horse, wild horse. The shadow of your smile, animal que sonríe y que camina. Nos hemos hecho fuertes y salvajes. Así, ritmo de sol, canción de muertos, estela de luz de las Perseidas. Recuerdo de la luz, animal inteligente que entona el tiempo, animal que participa y que conversa y que perdona y que ama y que convive. Víscera primaria, espíritu. The shadow of your smile, animal that smiles and walks. We have become strong and untamed, just like that. Rhythm of the sun, song of the dead, the Perseid's tale of light, memory of light, intelligent animal that modulates time, animal that partakes and that converses and that forgives and loves and coexists, primal entrails. Spirit. Ternura, disciplina, sobrevivencia. Tenderness, discipline, survival.
Hermoso, Beautiful. Beautiful. Qué lindo. I could actually like put myself in Vieques for that. I haven't been to Mona, but I remember the horses everywhere in Vieques, and it's beautiful. Wow.
Yeah. Just to shout out, if folks want to explore Nicole's work more in detail, right? She actually wrote to me is one of the first, right, significant works of Puerto Rican literature post Hurricane Maria. It was also a book that was reflecting on kind of rebirth, right? Reverdecer, right? The regreening of Puerto Rico. I think that aspect of her work is so powerful, right? Where other folks were, you know, understandably lingering, in the devastation. And so many of us in the diaspora felt, right, powerless, right? Her work is really sustaining, right? In terms of, you know, listening to nature, the way she does in that poem, right? And so as bad as things were, right? Nature didn't stop greening, and that becomes also a way to connect nature to the body and connect nature to the social body, right? As we come together in ways that maybe listen to nature differently, is another way to think about where we are planetarily, right, over the past 5+ years.
Yes, that's wonderful. That's beautiful.
Días Naturales, Natural Days, and the great Karina del Valle Shorsky is in the process of translating that, so keep an eye out for that.
Very cool. You said she's from Isabela. I'm originally from Quebradillas, which is like neighboring towns, like border, and I can see that the experience of being raised in Isabela versus being raised in San Juan is like pretty extreme, right? Mm. Or Quebradillas, like that they are the north west coast.
Grandfather is from Isabela, so I've been writing about, you know, going back after not going since childhood, and you know, it's been really really moving. So
yeah, and how like different parts of the island move differently or recover differently, like where it was like nature just like bounces back everywhere the same, but we have like our own little, you know, processes that are, you know, different from. This is very beautiful. Qué bello. Gracias. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Later on, I want to hear some of your work, but I will like ask you some other questions and we'll get there. Okay. So we are very aware of like how intense can be being a not white artist in this country. So we try to take care of ourselves. What is your form of self-care?
That's a good question. I think it's been a long journey, particularly in my case, being epileptic, my default is that my brain is always on, right? So I've, you know, walked that fine line between, you know, allowing myself release, right? But also staying productive, right? And under, right, racial capitalism. So a range of things, obviously writing, right, itself, but I reached a certain point where also as a tenure track professor, I was spending so much time, right, connected to a screen, right, doing work stuff, sending email. The last thing I wanted to do, right, was devote the rest of my time, right, being in front of a screen. So I actually, and this connects me to Nicole and to the work of someone like Beatriz Santiago Muñoz, right, I kind of developed a more rigorous practice of walking, which I've always done as one of those rare, because I'm epileptic also, I was always carless in San Juan, Puerto Rico, right? And living in New York. So walking for me is essential, right? And the sense of also allowing my walking, right, to connect with my creativity. So about now 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, I can't believe it's been that long, I started doing what I call these walkie-talkie-teki poems for walking, talking, and teching. And basically they were walking improvisations. So at the time, I couldn't really edit my poetry. I didn't have the time, right? Either I did the academic work that paid my bills and that continues to do so, right? My research, I was not hired at NYU where I teach as a poet or a translator. So all the poetry and all the translation, right, I do on the side, and I still have to publish, you know, peer-reviewed articles and all that stuff. So for a long time, I couldn't edit, right? All my editing energy went to the scholarship. And so I got to say, okay, I got to find a way to not edit, but still create. And so becoming a kind of improvisational poet who improvised while walking, right, was a way of also saying, okay, I need my downtime. I need for my own neurological health, right, to get away from screens, right? And somehow I connected the practice of like durational walking. So not just a short walk, but, you know, if I have the time, right, a 3-hour long walk or something like that, right? And just as part of that, I would be unplugged for a bunch of the time just to decompress. But when I could, I would get out my phone, right, and just start improvising into my phone. And over time, you know, I got better at it. But a crucial part was telling myself, this doesn't have to be poetry, right? This doesn't have to be successful. Right, in the realm of literary production or publication, because that would have been the same rat race I was trying to avoid, right, in the first place. So letting it be like process art, and it became something closer to performance art or durational performance, which was also very liberating, you know, in terms of anxiety and stuff like that. I wasn't trying to write a perfect poem. I was just documenting, right, today's walk, knowing that if it's terrible, if my documentation of it's terrible or sounds whack, I can always do it again tomorrow, right? And so I started to think about my trajectory, right, in terms of this kind of ongoing commitment where, you know, you put out a book and it, you know, and it doesn't do as well, you move on to the next one, right? And that really helped me recenter my practice as a kind of ritual walking. And also, of course, you know, as a person who you know, teaches disability studies as well, right, and thinks about, you know, the different kinds of embodiment, then also thinking about different kinds of walking, the privileges of walking, right? Obviously in the context of, you know, all the kinds of protests, right? And especially, right, protests around anti-Blackness, right? And then that folded into the project, the process of just documenting, right, what was happening on the street. Over the years, as I did this, my neighborhoods, two different neighborhoods in the South Bronx continued gentrifying. So without realizing it, I was doing these video improvisations, and over time they would become, right, these totally unintentional documents, right, of neighborhood change. And I would address that in some of the improvisations. There's one where I lament this barbershop, I think called, what is it, Borincuba, right? So the Puerto Rican Cuban barbershop with the sign that looked like it'd been there from the 60s, when that would have been an old, right, a Cuban neighborhood as well. And that, you know, that went away about maybe 5 years ago, but I was able to get that in an improvisation. So realizing all these, you know, the there was an unintentional power, right, in just the consistency of that walking, right, and that and the simplicity of that durational act. Most recently, I should say, where I am in the South Bronx is right by Randall's Island, which is now the site of the migrant encampment, right? Folks might know the whole story about it. I think it's the governor of Texas that sent all these migrants, and then so that was the site of one of the most recent walkie-talkie-talkies that I did. I'm like, I have to go there while that camp is still up, right? And just let it be whatever it is, right? So unintentionally, it's become a way, you know, what started off as a way to de-stress, right, has engaged all the stresses, right, of you know, the world, you know, the world around me. But you know, I think, again, steeling myself within you know, a kind of embrace, right, of just the very possibility of a kind of embodiment in the everyday, right, and letting that be enough, which is, I think, the best certainly I can do, right, and the best I can model for my students, right? I can, poetry can't do a lot more for you, but if it can make an art and, you know, and literature and what I teach, but if it can help you, right, negotiate your embodiment in the everyday, right, thinking with folks like Audre Lorde, right, then that's a lot, right? I'll take it. So, and I'll work with it.
That's wonderful. That is great. That sounds like such a good, healthy outlet, and while, and because we just can't stop creating, right? So even within that whole like venting and like disconnecting and self-care, that just comes at us, whether we want it or not. That's beautiful. Love that. Very cool. So The next question is very similar to that one, but I feel like you nailed it, because it's, what is accessibility to you and how do you implement it in your workplace? So there is a relationship there, but I feel like you could expand with accessibility as far as like how the world allows you that access.
Yeah, I mean, I could
implement your workplace, because I mean, I imagine in your work as a teacher, your work as a poet, like there's different ways of like accessing that accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think one very concrete example that I struggle with, that I have complicated feelings about, right, is precisely, right, the digital, which that's what I'm so fascinated about. I'm fascinated like philosophically in questions about digital presence, right? And so shout out to my amazing colleague, Diana Taylor, in her latest book, Presente, right? Thinking about the politics of presence, right? And so she writes in that book that somehow if we're connected online like we are here, okay, we're not present the same way as if we were sharing physical space, but something is still happening. And exactly what that is, right, is something important to reflect on, because I'm also a performance scholar, and I write a lot about kind of activist traditions on the ground, including, right, the Nuyorican movement. And so the value of folks sharing physical space together can't be denied. But also there's these questions of the kinds of access that digital space makes available. And I think I look at it in two ways, right, from a neurodivergence perspective. On the one hand, right, as an epileptic, I was really grateful initially for just the different kinds of access, right, that the move to digital, right, in the context of the pandemic, as awful as it was, and it is in so many ways, right, that it afforded not just to me, but to students, right, who were also struggling, right, with access, right. But in another way, right, from the point of view of my own like neurological, right, well-being, it did become overwhelming after a while. So it went from, you know, oh, access is cool, to again, capitalism just like overloading everything, right, to the point where I became kind of neurologically overloaded. And so, yeah. I think it's trial and error, in the sense of we can't let go of this technology, right, because think about all the access it makes possible. As a transnational scholar, also as a person who teaches, right, from a hemispheric perspective, right, a literature of the Americas and so on, it's important, right, that venues like this and initiatives like yours can connect all these people that yes. couldn't connect in person. So not to minimize that, but also just to acknowledge, right, in addition to a lot of questions about control over information and all that data, right, and the kind of anti-democratic nature of a lot of these technologies, just the question of also the trade-off, right, in terms of the access they make possible, but at what cost. So I think access is crucial, but for me, it can't be separated, right, from what you do with that access. Who does the access serve? And that's where I think arts and culture can really be powerful in helping us think about, the complexities of embodiment, the complexities of community formation. Those are things you tell stories about, right? And yeah. Stories that don't always have a clear resolution, rather mm-hmm. than something where, you know, you give a yes or no answer, right, in terms of access. You have to, like, provide what Appiah calls like thick description. Give me a thick description of what you mean by access, and on a case by case basis, right? We could negotiate, which I'm sure you and the collective do all the time, right? It's in a trial and error, and it's not going to be perfect, and so you tinker with it.
Very cool. This is maravilloso. Estoy disfrutando tanto esta conversación. I'm enjoying this conversation deeply. Just for the listeners, me and Nura Joan met. A lifetime ago in Puerto Rico, at the University of Puerto Rico. And we just kind of stay in touch with like through Facebook, I guess. And when this opportunity happened, I kept up with your work, and I'm really happy that you agreed to be a part of this, because this is a wonderful conversation. I'm really happy to share it with you. Okay, so in your line of work, how do you establish boundaries, particularly with those who hold more power and status than you?
Oof, that's a hard one. I mean, I want to shout out the great Lorgia Garcia Peña's book, Community is Rebellion. So if you haven't read that book, or if you're thinking about who else to invite, right? I think all of Lorgia's work, right, as a as an Afro-Dominican scholar, right, starting with her first book that investigates the border, right, between Haiti and the Dominican Republic, right, as a foundational site, right, for discourses of Dominicanidad, right, that reproduce, anti-Blackness and so on. Her work is just so urgent. But in this latest book, she's thinking very much in the context of her own, right, experience in academia, and Google her, right, we're not going to get into that. But the most, one of the most brilliant folks I know working today. And so she writes about the danger of being the one, right? And the one in the sense of that, either that token person, right, or that chosen person, and not just of being the one, of internalizing yourself, for yourself, the value of being the one, right? So you use the fact that you're the one to say, oh my gosh, I have to drop everything, right? And do this because I'm the only person in my, the only Latinx person in my department. And I deal with that every day, even with all my privileges, right? The institution doesn't care, right? So you have to, writing letters for students, recruiting, every diversity initiative that the administration, right, comes up with, whether or not they reproduce, right, stuff that we're already doing and actually take resources away from stuff that we do, right? So it's an ongoing battle. And I think that book's reminder, right, that our identity cannot be being the one for these institutions, right? That's not how transformation happens. So yeah, so I think she argues for a kind of reverse extractivism, right? The same way, right, colonialism extracts, right, from its colonies, right, and takes for itself. We can maybe use our positionality within these, problematic institutions, right, as a way of extracting, right, resources from them, right, and distributing them, right, for those folks who don't have that access to the institution. And reading that book, there was so much that I was struggling to articulate for myself and to analyze, and Alorjia really did it with a kind of power and clarity, and also from her own personal history. So shout out to Community as Rebellion, definitely check it out. And so that's been something that I try to do always at NYU is, invite people to the classroom, pay them well, right? And ensure that those people aren't just tenured professors or future tenured professors, that they're activists, that they're working artists, that they're, right, independent scholars, and that they reflect, right, very much, communities of color, migrant communities, right, undocumented communities, right, queer communities that are not, they're not traditionally represented in these institutional spaces. So that's a little bit that I can do, but that's something I've been doing for many years, but reading Lorjia's book really clarified for me, right? And made me also just clarify that to students that I'm mentoring, right? That here's a book that tries to really think about the privilege it is to be in one of these, universities, but also the trap that it can be, right? And how to not, confundir una cosa con la otra, right? Yes, there's resources, right? But be very deliberate and very mindful about what that means and what it doesn't.
Absolutely. So can you please say the name of the writer again?
Sure. It's Lorjia, Lorgia Garcia Peña, Garcia hyphen Peña. And the book is called Community as Rebellion, published by Haymarket.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm sure that a lot of the Not White Collective are going to get right onto that for sure. We all will.
Well, they say cite Black women, right? So there you go. Cite Black women, read Black women. So let's cite and, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you more about your own work. And if you can talk about your latest projects that are like within your own, creative space. And if you want to, or you could share some of your work with us, that would be lovely, please.
Absolutely. Well, this is my latest book of poetry that came out in 2021, Transversal. I wanted a title that would work in both languages. And it was really inspired by, among other things, the work of Edouard Glissant, right, the Caribbean theorist, poet, and philosopher, who I was, lucky enough to audit a class with, right, while I was doing my PhD. And so I was thinking of a way to approach, right, language difference and translation in my own work as someone who's self-translated for a long time, right, in thinking about the non-equivalence between languages, right? So there's so against both a standard English and a standard Spanish, understood as what Glissant calls vehicular languages, right? The language of empire, that traveled in a very privileged fashion from Europe to the New World, right? Quote unquote New World. So that idea of the transversal, right, gave me a sense of it's a transversal line, right? It's not an equivalent, right? And so different varieties of English and Spanish, right, are racialized and classed in different ways, right? There's questions of untranslatability, questions of embodiment. And so I'm trying to also, in that sense, on the page, right, to try to approach the transversal as a way of thinking about the relationship between the two languages. So instead of doing, say, a column in English or a column in Spanish, which I'd done in some of my earlier books, right, I started to think about a more intimate, perhaps, relationship between the two. And so you might see here, I might read this one, but here's the case of the poem, and I'm self-translating a décima dedicated to the great Julia de Burgos, right, a kind of OG, right, in the art of self-translation in a Boricua and New York context herself. And so I thought it would be cool, right, to organize the work on the page, right, in a way that brought together, right, using only a subtle difference in font, the English and the Spanish, right? And so it becomes almost as a way of contaminate one with the other and think about the beautiful impurity that is so many of our linguistic universes, right, in Puerto Rico, but also across our many Caribes. So I can read that if you want. It actually is a like décimas, which is, you know, as a form originally from Spain, but common in like folk poetry, oral poetry across Latin America, including Puerto Rico, right? So it has a very specific rhyme scheme: A B B A A C C D D C, eight syllables. And often it has a pie forzado or a refrain, right? And in this case, I use lines from Julia de Burgos, right? From her poems, Farewell and Welfare Island, which she wrote in originally in English, and a poem in Spanish called O Mar No Esperes Más. So let me do this. And they're décimas inspired by Julia de Burgos, so I call them juliésimas.
Qué bueno. I love her, but go on, please. Thank you.
Juliésimas. Now poetry is just a name for this, our faint embodied sound, for music once it's not around, for ash in lockstep with the flame, for streets still summoning the same old shadows, watch buses sever concrete. No, this war will never end. Yes, our breath is the front line. Sing my cry that is no more mine, but hers and his forever. Our war is in the wounds we brought from our archipelagic ports, making us dark echoes of sorts, boneyards of songs, islands of thought shaped by blood currents under clot of empire, until Julia gave us back our ghosts and dared the slave to disinter her violence. Sing the comrades of my silence, the phantoms of my grave. Juliésimas. Tras de la poesía nos queda lo sonoro, sin palabras ni coro, cuerpos en entropía. La calle todavía pide sombras, no cruces, sin ver los autobuses, la guerra que respiro, inútilmente estiro mi camino sin luces. La guerra que se trajo de puertos tropicales nos hizo sucursales de huesos, un refajo de islas en el tajo de imperios. Soy desgloses de Julia, la conoces, bajo un cielo de litio. ¡Como muertos sin sitio! Se sublevan mis voces. Julia de Burgos.
Qué bueno. Bravo. Qué bueno quedó eso. Qué, wow. Precioso. ¿Quieres compartir alguno otro más? Porque sé que ya pronto te tienes que ir. So would you like to share some more?
I want to go all the way back to what I was talking about, the wokitokitekis, right? The improvised poems. This is a variation on that, but I did it at the start of the pandemic under lockdown, right? So I did it straight to audio in this case as a voice note improvised onto my phone while in the backyard. Lucky enough to have a yarda in the South Bronx, right? So tried to put that to good use. Remember those days when you weren't even sure you should be walking outside, right? So you just stayed home. But it was also those beautiful early days of the pandemic. I remember when the birds came back, right? And for a second you thought, wow, aquí algo es posible, right? Something else is possible. So I wanted to honor the beauty of that moment. And in this sense, this piece is very much informed by translating Nicole's poetry, which I was starting to do, right? The ways in which she thinks about, listening to the natural world, not as a way of, in a hippie way, denying the violences of our own, right? But being just more, right? More responsible and more responsive, right? And how we understand, right? Our privileges and our responsibilities. So this is called Ave, Lockdown Song, Canto de Cuarentena. And again, it was totally improvised. But hopefully it has something of the energy of that moment. And often when I improvise, right, what you're going to get is just the background noise, right? So the noise of the city, the noise of, construction, right, or passersby, the noise of the breeze and the wind, right? And so often I try to reproduce that noise using my phone, right? Since it's what I used to compose the poem in the first place. So let's do a little phone.
Very cool.
Ave, improvising, Bronx 2020, improvisando, el Bronx 2020. The birds are back. Volvieron las aves. Ya tú sabes, comienza otra conversación posible. A new conversation is possible con el yo interior, with the I within. Without what I had, sin lo que tenía, but with what I am, pero con lo que soy. Me atrevo, I dare. Improvise, improvisar, some future skies, ciertos cielos futuros. ¿Qué más hay? What else is there to do? Mientras los pájaros y el tráfico se pelean, while the birds and the traffic fight it out in the shadow of the Bruckner Expressway, bajo la sombra de la autopista Bruckner, en el sur del Bronx, in the South Bronx, donde generaciones de mi gente, where generations of my people han luchado, have struggled, han sobrevivido, have survived. Libre albedrío de cantar, the sovereignty of song, even amid the distortion of these technologies, aún en plena distorsión de tantas tecnologías. Otro cuerpo es posible. Another body is possible. Cuerpos no productivos que no funcionen. Unproductive bodies that don't always work. Network in other ways desde otro tipo de redes. No te me enredes con lo que te digo. Don't get tied up with what I'm saying. I mean, tying up is okay if it's consensual. Enredarse y atarse está bien si es consensual. Pero me interesa. But I'm interested in the natural flow of the song, el flujo de este canto en su quebranto, broken but finding its way, pero hallándose sus propios semantemas, its own semantic properties. Not all bodies have to be able. No todos los cuerpos tienen que ser capaces. Hay otras voces, there are other voices. Otras maneras de habitar, other ways to inhabit, no need to exhibit, no hace falta exhibir, vivir dentro de sí y para sí, por una vez, to live within oneself and for oneself, for once, enhorabuena, it's about damn time. Hubo cruces, hubo diásporas, hubo desplazamientos, hubo muertes. There were crossings, there were diasporas, there were displacements, there were deaths, and there will be more. Y más habrá. No obstante, aquí estamos. Nonetheless, here we are, cantándoles a los que no están, singing for those who aren't here, pero que están, but that are here after all, pero que están aquí después de todo, como el eco del canto de esos pájaros, like the echo of the bird's song you'll never hear, que nunca oirás, porque lo llevas dentro de ti, because you carry it within you, from island to island, de isla en isla, para habitar lo posible, to inhabit the possible. I've been thinking about land lately. Llevo pensando en la tierra recientemente. The terrain, el terreno, the territory, el territorio de la voz, of the voice, donde nos hallamos, where we find ourselves. Don't think of this as claustrophobia. No pienses en esto como una encerradera. Hay salida. There's a way out, and it's through the voice. Y es a través de la voz, trappings of the voice, within and without, adentro y afuera, de sí mismo, of oneself, otro ritmo, another rhythm, 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 ritmo de uno y con uno, conocerse, to know oneself, llamarse, to call oneself, to recall, rememorar, another possible future, otro futuro posible. And that's where the poem in the book ends. But I talked about improvisation, así que aquí comienza la improvisación, que es mi única nación. Les cuento algo, I'll tell you something, I'm a fraud, soy un fraude. Tanto que si Puerto Rico y el sur del Bronx, so much about PR and the South Bronx, and guess what, y adivinen, estoy en Florida, I'm in Florida, Atlantic Center for the Arts, alguna residencia fancy, some fancy residence. I'm the biggest cliché, soy el cliché más grande del mundo, un boricua, no en el Bronx ya, ni en Río Piedra, sino en Florida, a Puerto Rican, no longer in the Bronx or in San Juan, but in Florida. I'm retiring, retírenme ya, entierren mi poesía, bury my poetry, bury me someplace like this, entiérrenme en un lugar así, y que me vuelva la tierra digital, and that I become the digital dirt that brings us together, que nos une y que nos dispersa, and that disperses us. Let that be the beauty of our struggle. Que esa sea la belleza de nuestra lucha. Gracias.
Wow. Bravo. Me encantó. Qué bueno, chico. That was so good. Estoy super feliz. Thank you so, so, so much for sharing your thoughts and your brain with us. Gracias por compartir con todas nosotras. ¿Tienes alguna última palabra? Porque you have like one last thing to say, because we're...
No, I just want to show. I want to show the shape of Nicole's beautiful accordion fold-out book, Amona. This is the one that's based in Mona, right? So just to show the creativity of our poets. And of course, that is the other text, along with the Vieques text I read from, that is documented here. So thinking also about the need to document a lot of these histories, right? So many of our communities, not just in Puerto Rico, but urban communities. I mentioned gentrification in the South Bronx, right? I know the complexities, right? A little bit about the complexities of the situations in Pittsburgh, right? And so thinking about documenting these histories. I know it's a complicated debate in my own neck of the woods, right? Because we know how much violence archives, right, do to people in our communities, but we also know how we struggle, right, for from the lack of documentation, right, of, you know, our histories and our communities. So maybe, you know, let's reflect on that. Let's be grateful, right, for initiatives such as this one, right, where we can come together, but also the chance to learn more, right, about the situated nature of our struggles. And so I'd love to hear more, maybe, you know, as we follow up offline about the work that you are all doing. Y gracias por eso.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy that you joined us. I'm really excited. This is the last in dialogue conversation of this series. We may be coming back. I think we will be coming back. And definitely consider all the beautiful, wonderful people you suggested for us, because it would be great to continue those conversations. Well, I'd like to thank Horacio and Noel for joining us in Dialogue Series. I want to thank my sister of the hashtag Not White Collective, and I want to thank City of Asylum for all the wonderful work and those that support us and this initiative. Thank you. Muchas gracias. And have a good night.
In Dialogue with the Not White Collective podcast, would like to thank the Arts and Equity Reimagined Fund, the City of Asylum Pittsburgh, and Rugged Angel Productions. For more information on the artists that make up the Not White Collective, please go to notwhitecollective.com. You can also follow Not White Collective on Instagram and like on Facebook.